You guys ready? You feel good? Feel good?
Let's go.
We ready? All right.
I feel adequate.
Adequate?
That's good enough.
That's not good enough.
Oh, shit.
Hello. We are the Brothers Geek. This is our podcast. I'm Patrick Schmaltz with my two brothers, Andrew Schmaltz. Hello, Andrew.
Hello.
And my other brother who's adequate, Christopher Schmaltz.
Hi.
Christopher's just adequate today.
Just adequate. We're brothers, we're geeks. We talk about geeky things. This is episode number 96, September 12th. We're recording. It's freaking awesome.
What's up, boys?
Yeah.
No.
Hold on. Life is happening.
What's up? What's up?
What is going on in your lives, Patrick? What are you filming now?
Currently nothing. I worked on a bunch of Nike commercials last week, and it was, I would like to say, it's really interesting being part, and this is not at all like what we talk about on the podcast, but it's really interesting being like on the Nike campus with this whole Colin Kaepernick thing
in our lives, dude. So totally. This is totally pertinent.
It's
to
totally,
you,
it's not, yeah, yeah, but it's I not like geek related. So it's more like there? Socially related, but they were just like, I mean, they're totally like drinking the juice and all, and I'm reading all these like things on Twitter about people burning their socks and like destroying their shoes, but like you hear about how sales of Nike stuff like ticked up, like people are like complimenting them because of the, you know, them supporting Colin Kaepernick, and this weird issue about like him kneeling. Who gives a shit about him kneeling?
Lots of people do.
I'm
not one of them. I mean, I am pretty progressive when it comes to this kind of thing. I think he's highlighting an important issue, and
yes,
I'm not offended by his form of protest
yes
at all.
Yeah,
I try to understand those people who are, but I struggle with that, to be completely honest. Some people, people believe in that stuff very, very deeply.
Well,
define that stuff, and that's the point, Andrew.
Exactly.
It's tough because my
only comment, not to be social, and yeah, you know, we're
pretty vocal about how kind of progressive.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
My only comment on this is that if you're burning your Nike shit in response to the Colin Kaepernick campaign, you're a fucking moron.
pretty much. Yeah. A, Nike doesn't give a shit because you already bought their stuff.
Yep. B, we don't have to explain it, Patrick.
I don't need to boil it down.
No.
Okay.
On the Portland like main Nike campus.
This is Nike campus in Hillsboro. I was working for a company that was the what's the word I'm looking for? They're a company that's being paid by Nike. I'm not working for
contracting
Nike contractors. That's what it is. So I got paid by them to do random Nike stuff. There was a few different Nike jobs I was working on for them. But it was interesting being like on the campus, and like they were in the middle of doing their like Just Do It campaign, and they were having this like Just Do It award winners, which are like employees that have been chosen by their own team members to be like they're like brand, like, you know, they're following the Nike idea.
They're brand ambassadors.
Yeah, brand ambassadors. That's right. Yeah, perfect.
Dude, you need to work in corporate America.
Totally.
Come on, dude.
So much corporate speak. It's so ridiculous.
Get in a freaking cubicle for a few days and learn the corporate.
I blacked out there for a minute.
Stay out of cubicles.
The Triduum of corporate America. That needs to be this podcast title.
We're the Triduum.
The Triduum.
Three of us are a Triduum. I'm the only one who actually regularly experiences corporate America. Don't get in it.
I know. I work as least corporate as I can. I'm the guy who likes being out in the woods,
even
who's filming,
Disney
and
has signed your paychecks.
No,
I'm the guy who's working for
totally
Nike and Disney. No.
I know. Here's what it is. It's like I'm not the guy who like
and
goes
Netflix
to the office. I'm not the
Netflix.
I work for Netflix. I work for Hulu. I work for Disney. I've worked for Nike now. I've worked for Adidas. You know, So I've definitely worked for these big corporations, but I'm the guy who's like on the street filming the thing. I'm not wearing like a tie and I'm in a cubicle and
Hold on. Here we go.
Challenge.
A tie is representative of work of being corporate.
In my brother's Andrew's words, I don't want a noose around my neck.
Dude, I hate ties.
That's what I'm saying.
I am required occasionally to wear one.
I love ties, though. This is the thing. I think they have great style. I love bow ties. I love ties in general and style, but...
Bow ties are cool.
Bow ties are cool.
I just don't like what they represent for my life. Meaning,
I agree, but like having to wear one every day and being that corporate like shill, that sounds gross.
My office is pretty casual, actually. I wear jeans and
that's nice.
Adidas sneakers to work every day.
That always like drove me nuts because you're just like in a cubicle on the phone. You're not like you're not dealing with customers like face to face.
I work in a national office, dude. We don't have any customer interactions ever.
So let the people wear what they want.
Relation to my job.
I guess they want people to be a little more professional or something. They want to like set a standard.
Professionalism doesn't depend at all on what
I'm saying. I don't think it should. Like, you should be able to wear what you want.
That is the main point.
Be comfortable. Yep. You know?
Yeah.
Be comfortable.
Anyway, and enjoy.
Getting back to your anti-corporate stance, and Patrick.
Yes. Anyway, like, it was just interesting being a part, like, being on the campus when they were talking about this controversial social change that they're taking a stance. There's this corporation that is taking a stance, and how the rest of the world is reacting, and me standing next to like,
is there like artwork and advertisements like all over the campus?
And
Serena Williams.
Nonstop, dude. The campus is beautiful. There's banners, huge banners of like athletes, and like the buildings are named after is Michael Jordan building, and it's
all those athletes that paid for all that
Mia Hamm, exactly. And what's the other one? The new one is this Sebco. I don't know. Yeah,
is LeBron Nike?
No LeBron building yet. They're building like a ton
LeBron's
of new buildings.
LeBron's actually
too.
Part of Jumpman, I think. So he's under the Jordan umbrella. I think he's under the Jordan umbrella right now.
Well, then he's Nike, because I mean,
he'll have his own thing.
I would figure that he had his own thing.
I think he has his own brand, but it's technically part of Jumpman.
That's interesting.
I'm not a sneakerhead, so I don't pay attention to that stuff that much.
It's really interesting, like being a part of these, filming these things for corporations that have like a message and have like a goal and have.
Were you doing Kaepernick campaign?
No. Ad? It completely unrelated.
Oh, okay.
But because I was filming there the week that they announced it, there was just so much buzz about it. People talking about it.
They were doing an ad on campus. They were filming on campus.
I probably shouldn't talk too much about the specifics of what I was working on. I signed an NDA, but I was working on. Is more just like corporate hoo-ha-ness, you know. Internal videos. One of them was
cool to be involved in that kind of stuff.
Right,
though.
100%.
It's an exposure to totally. You know. Most of the time, when you're doing your Portland stuff, you're doing like a revolutionary video, right?
Well, you know? I mean, I'm
from the streets.
I do want to be part of I do want to work on stuff that. The company has like a message, and they're working towards something of value. Yeah. And it was good to be part of like the Nike group, you know, when they're trying to like help social change, and they're trying to support people that are standing up for themselves and standing up for what they believe in. And so I appreciate that. Like I was really interesting, but like, yeah, I mean, this is a clothing company. This is a shoe company that.
Yep. They're trying to sell shit.
They're trying to sell shit. Exactly. So it's kind of like this, like, okay, how much are you really invested in this, and how much of this is like a giant marketing campaign? Because everybody's talking about Nike.
More so marketing than
dude.
It's all marketing. What are you talking about?
Right, right.
Don't be naive.
Yeah.
They read the tea leaves. It's called market research.
Don't be naive,
and they realize,
man, it's all about selling more of their shit.
Anyway, so
they realize that their demographic are the demographic that supports cap. So
totally.
That's why they're putting in.
Or they've run the numbers and they figure, okay, what we're going to lose are people that we don't give a shit anyway.
Yeah, racist assholes.
They're not buying the things that we're selling.
Yeah, racist assholes who don't understand that white cops are shooting black people all the time. It's like horrible. Yeah. It's definitely a problem in this country, and it's ridiculous that nothing is happening. So
no, maybe corporations act through people, right?
Mm-hmm,
people seem to always forget that, and so there are human beings who are making these decisions, and I assume, I know actually that they're making decisions that are a mixed thing. They're absolutely looking at we can sell more stuff, but they're also, hey, this is the right thing to do for us as a brand.
Totally. Can't they do both? I mean, yeah,
absolutely.
Absolutely. Like we're gonna support this person. They didn't need to do that. They didn't need to like pick Colin Kaepernick. He's not even like a quarterback on any team right now. Like it's like they could have done nothing. They could have said nothing.
But I would argue that Kaepernick is one of the most famous athletes in America, and people know him as an athlete who took a stance.
Well,
and
it's lawsuit against NFL for collusion to keep him out of the game, so.
Which he is 100% going to win.
The
NFL is going to pay him seven figures, dude.
It's very, very possible. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, anyways, that's what I've been working on.
Cool.
That's cool.
It's some cool stuff, but we should talk about geeky things because, you know, this is what we do, Brothers Geek. So, we all watched. Hold on.
Let me offer a clarification there, Patrick. Because
what's up?
Oh, I know what else you got to talk about.
What?
We got to talk about Dune news.
We are geeks. So if we talk about ourselves, that is totally wheelhouse.
True. Exactly. True. I'm sorry. You're right, Christopher. We can talk about whatever we want. It's true.
We can.
Today we will talk about Dune news, Andrew. Don't let me forget that.
We got to talk about that because
but today
so much hope in my heart.
Right. So today, big news is Henry Cavill has announced he's not going to play Superman anymore. So, I mean,
Brothers has apparently confirmed it.
Well,
Henry Cavill is no longer going to be the Superman.
I've read
DC.
A couple of different things that say that he doesn't want to do it, and then others that have said that they couldn't reach a deal.
That's the stuff I read was they couldn't reach a deal.
Yeah.
So I mean, Henry Cavill's blowing up, and they were
the piece of information is he has agreed to a deal to play Geralt, the main character of
I'm
Witcher.
Totally
that's
psyched
Netflix.
About.
Oh yeah. So have either of you played The Witcher 3? I mean, or any of the Witcher games? Like
I played a ton of Witcher 3.
Really? So yep. I mean, I played about 5 hours of The Witcher 3, and I know it's a great game. I don't know, it kind of got swept under the rug for me, but it's a really good game, and the world is really interesting. That's what I'm excited about. It's like this dark fantasy story. What's up, bro?
I was gonna say everyone I've ever met that has played through that game has sung its praises, talking about how it's one of their favorite games ever.
It's almost
universally acknowledged as one of the most fun games they've ever played.
The world that they've created for the Witcher series is really interesting. It's similar to stuff, but it's darker fantasy than most games.
Chris, I mean, how many hours did you put into
it? How much did you play it, Chris?
And I'm not even close to finishing.
The game is like 200 freaking hours long.
I'm probably 30 hours in.
Yeah. And people talk about how big it is.
I fell off of it not because it's not an awesome game. I fell off of it because the controls were clunky.
Oh, really?
Okay.
And so it's awesome, but the controls are clunky, and I hate fighting the controls to play a game. Like if
you can't customize it the way you want.
You play this on the PC, I would assume, because it's
no.
You play
it on console.
Xbox One, I guess you have to. Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
So, but they updated. They updated the controls, and so I am. I will absolutely finish it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that game is badass.
The game is seriously badass. So
The world is badass. The books are cool, interesting. Yeah. It's dark fantasy. It's fun.
It's dark
really
fantasy.
Interesting.
And it's got a really interesting story.
The show will be, if it's the show reflects it, man, it'll be good.
Yeah.
You know what's the tiny little? This is not. So listening to another podcast about The West Wing,
mm-hmm.
there is a writer. The writer and showrunner for the Witcher series for Netflix used to work on the writing staff for The West Wing. She was like a junior writer. I forget her name. Lauren Hisrick, I think, is her name. There was a story, actually, that she may have left social media because she was getting, you know, of course, the angry, loud, dipshit fanboys out there.
Dude, that is way too commonplace these days. And it's irritating.
It's the 3% of fanboys that choose to, you know, make their opinions known in the most horrible and disgusting ways possible, and they ruin it for the rest of us who just enjoy things and want to experience it. Anyway,
can we just be nicer to each other and not hate on people so much? God damn.
Anyway, Lauren Hisrick, she is the showrunner for The Witcher, and she used to be on the writing staff for The West Wing towards the end of its run.
What are your favorite shows, too?
Some of my favorite shows of all time. So that's fun, and it's honestly all, you know, little progressiveness. It's nice to have a woman running a big TV show. So that's more commonplace, and I'm sure, I mean, she's got a good pedigree with her background, so let's... I'm going to absolutely watch that show, and I need to get into the game, too. I need to buy it and give it a shot, because I have not heard a bad thing about that game and its gameplay. So
It scratches a fantasy RPG.
I love fantasy RPG, and it's one of the biggest games, like, ever for that. And you can just – the story is long and beautiful, and it's a beautiful game. God, like – I have it on my computer, and I have that thing turned up to, like, 11, and it just looks – it's awesome. It's incredible looking.
Getting back to the main point, Henry Cavill.
Yeah.
No
longer Superman.
Going to play Superman in the DC movie universe.
Honestly, what do we think of this?
Geralt,
do we like him?
The Witcher Netflix series.
Do we ever like him as Superman? I kind of liked him,
I loved him as Superman.
I think they gave him bad content. They gave him bad scripts. Like the movie.
I read that headline today. Some feed I follow on Twitter commented on that specifically. He was always better than the Superman he played was always better than the movies that he was in.
Henry Cavill is awesome.
Superman.
And like, you know, honestly,
he could actually act, and he had the perfect physique.
Man of Steel, you know, I've kind of flip-flop back and forth on Man of Steel. Honestly, I really like that movie. It's not like the comic book Superman that you want. It's not the hopeful Superman. They decided to go the darker route. Superman is this thing that humans would be afraid of. Instead of like, oh, Superman's the best. Everybody loves Superman. Because that's the comics. Comics are like, oh, yes, we love having like the superpower guy run around. But, you know, they decided to go a darker path. Batman v Superman, the rated R version, really good movie. Like, it's a much better film. And Superman has a really good arc in the rated R version that is not in the theatrical version. Like, Superman goes through these struggles, and you understand his choices, and, like, he just decides to, like, climb mountains and be alone. And it makes so much more sense. And so I'm really kind of not happy with this. I mean, Justice League sucked, but not because he sucked, because the movie sucked. So
he's always been a good Superman in my mind. I enjoy him, and he's great in Fallout. He's a movie star,
so, dude.
He can carry a high concept fantasy series on Netflix.
What was that? What was that spy movie he was in? That Guy Ritchie movie?
Man from Uncle.
That movie wasn't terrible.
It's
fun.
One of those movies that you can sleep on, and then you go back and you watch it. Like, this is actually a lot of fun.
It's like my first watch of that, I was like, it's kind of weak. But like, dude, that movie's fun. It grows on you. Totally. So yep. Henry Cavill is great, and I'm kind of sad, but he's moving on to other bigger and better shit. That's how I feel about that. So
yeah, it signals a larger revamp, head to toe revamp of the DC movie universe that I think they're embracing.
Well, I saw one thing on Twitter that was saying that they want Michael B. Jordan to be Superman.
That would be awesome.
What do we think about that? A black Superman? I mean, people would freak out, I'm sure, but
people
would
lose their shit. But why not?
Yeah,
he's a great actor. He can pull off the physicality of it.
Would he be Kal-El? Would he be like that? The same guy? Would he just? He's just black. It's that's it.
Why not?
Yeah, why not? But
it's a space alien.
Well, I mean, they did that with Spider-Man a little with in the comics with Miles Morales, but they renamed Morales. It wasn't Peter Parker.
I know, but he had the benefit of Brian Michael Bendis writing him
totally,
and that inherently made him charming. Inherently gave him great stories. It will all be about how they choose to tell the story. With a new black actor playing Superman.
Totally cool with it. If they just decide to call him Kal-El and just do it, why not? Yeah. Who cares?
It's a good movie. It's a good movie.
Yeah, it's a good movie. You got a good script around it and it's a good director, you can do anything.
It just signals more and more that Warner Brothers is getting away from the Snyderverse.
They realize it backfired. Like, a lot of their crazy hardcore fanboys are like, why isn't it like Marvel? Why isn't it fun? Well, they tried to do that with Justice League.
They haven't been putting out good quality movies for the most part. I mean, they've been misfires.
The only one that's good that you can say is good is Wonder Woman. That's like the only one that's like, it's fun, it's got the right tone, it's got great actors involved, and the movie is solid. Like,
and they told a good story. Yeah.
They told a good story, exactly. So that's the only one that I have mixed feelings about what I've seen for Shazam too. Like, They're steering too much into the, let's have fun, and they're forgetting to tell a good story.
Who knows what they're gonna do with it, dude? Absolutely none of the story idea from that trailer. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's a 12-year-old. If he suddenly was a superhero, what would he be like? Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's the sense I get from the trailer, and I think that's the character. So we'll see how they work it out. I'm not going in there with any preconceived ideas about what kind of movie. And I mean, Aquaman looks like it's getting generally favorable previews as well. Like, people are saying that it's a fun movie. So, they've got a couple more movies down the pipe, and we'll see. Wonder Woman 2 is in production.
I could see Aquaman just being really bad. Like that. If it's not handled correctly, it will be like.
But that's true of any movie, dude.
There's just so much CGI and so much schlock in that could happen with that movie, and I don't know.
Dude, there are entire movies that are done with mocap now. I mean, Avatar's entire movie was done with mocap.
Totally.
If it's done well, it's done well.
And everybody on the internet is talking about how it looks just like, it's like Thor and Black Panther smushed together. It's the same freaking story. He has to fight this guy who's like,
they understand.
Right.
Christopher,
right.
Do you want to weigh in on this?
Yeah. we're just going back.
I know. We're just, yeah.
Anyways. So that happened. Maybe we should talk about Jack Ryan. Maybe we should move on.
One more piece of, let's talk about a little more piece of news.
Okay.
Casting news for the Denis Villeneuve.
Oh, yeah.
I've come to learn how to pronounce his name correctly. It's not watching YouTube videos.
It's not Denis Villeneuve.
Denis.
Denis?
He's French-Canadian.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll take it. Yeah, sure.
Denis Villeneuve.
Mm-hmm.
He is now going to make the try to adapt Dune into two feature films. He cast the role of Paul with an Oscar nominee, Timothy Chalamet. Is that how you pronounce his name?
Chalamet? I don't know.
Yeah. Chalamet. Lady Jessica. He has hopefully been, that's the rumor, I think it's nearly confirmed, that Rebecca Ferguson.
Yeah, from Fallout.
One of our newly christened favorite actresses is going to play Lady Jessica.
She's great.
I think is amazing.
It's a great idea.
That's amazing casting.
Yeah, she's fantastic, so I'm totally cool with that.
Yeah, Christopher is the resident Dune expert. What do you think about this casting of Rebecca Ferguson as Lady Jessica?
I think it's close to perfection.
Yeah.
And I love a younger Paul.
She has the right look, the age, all of it is fantastic.
Well, and she's not too old.
She's a great actor. She is, it's awesome.
Jessica has a lot of complexity in that book. She carries the first half of the book in large part, and she has a lot. She's the most politically kind of savvy, and she has a lot of internal stuff going on the whole time. When protecting your son and protecting your Duke and being in love and seeing all the machinations going on in the palace and everything, she's the smartest character in the story for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be.
I'm excited to see Dune with a new art style, a new ship styles and character stuff.
I cannot expel the David Lynch Dune from my brain.
There's some things that works and there's some things that don't. And when I read Dune, I had already seen the David Lynch Dune, so I was
struggling mightily against that.
Right, I was picturing the worms as the David Lynch worms. And I want to see Villeneuve's take on the art and the still suits and the ships and them traveling through time and through space and stuff, how that is going to look to him.
Yeah,
I'm really excited about that movie. So
pumped. Yeah, he's got an eye and a vision. I have absolutely no doubt he will be able to put his view on it, but also be faithful to what the book is and all everything that the book is about.
Totally.
I think that the casting so far has been fantastic.
Sure. Yep. Yeah. So
if Rebecca Ferguson is in, I'm going to go to this movie regardless. But
sure,
that gives me hope that he gets it.
He's making the right kind of choices.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Great. Let's talk about Jack Ryan, because it came out on Amazon Prime. It was an Amazon Prime exclusive, starring John Krasinski from The Office. I have a
Quiet
lot to
place.
Quiet Place.
A Quiet Place.
I have a lot of things to say about this, so I'll let you guys go ahead of me. What do you think of this show? How much have you watched?
I've watched all the entire series. Yeah.
You've seen it in entirety. What did you guys think? What was your takeaway? Christopher?
Chris?
Yeah.
By the numbers, pretty dumb spy show that is an attempted update at Jack Ryan's, easier to write, easier to set up world of Cold War, trying to move it forward into a era where the writers are trying to inject complexity.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a nice job. I give them credit for humanizing the terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
But to what end? And the Jack Ryan stuff is a mixed bag.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of meh about it. It gets a 5 or 6 out of 10 for me.
Yeah.
I mean, there were definitely some entertaining sort of modern day CIA operative stuff. but for the most part,
you know, doesn't break any new ground. And it could have been, you could have changed the names, and it's not a Jack Ryan thing.
It
bummed me out for that.
Did you ever read any of the books, Christopher?
I read all of them, dude.
Oh, and wow. Okay.
They are great books. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are great, you know, politics aside, they are great spy books, international intrigue, action, adventure books. I vividly remember reading as a young person The Hunt for Red October, and the cool detail, pages upon pages of detail about submarines was just freaking awesome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the books continued to do that, and then he, you know, began to get into special ops kind of stuff, and the later books that focused on Mr. Clark were cool and the team of special ops, but those sort of were not as good as his earlier.
And Mr. Clark is in Clear and Present Danger as like the handler of the team that's in.
He's Willem Dafoe,
right? Yeah.
So Clark plays a prominent role, and they are regularly teamed up together in the books as Jack gets to be sort of more prominent. He's up on the operations side instead of being an analyst. And so Clark plays a much bigger role because, of course, Clancy wanted to write more action-related shit.
Mm-hmm.
And so Jack Ryan was not an operative in the field, and so what does he got to do? He's got to combine the analyst side, and he did a nice job. The books were good in that they really they indicated and they provided agency for Jack Ryan in terms of his intellect and his analysis, but also put him and Clark in the field occasionally where Clark, you know, got to be a badass and Jack Ryan got to fumble through. So,
So Andrew, go ahead. What did you think?
I largely kind of agree with Christopher. It was a meh for me. And I hate to compare and contrast things because everything we should evaluate everything based on its own merits, but we know just based on the last few years of shows like Homeland and you know, even before that, you know, 24, stuff like that, it's possible to tell an interesting, complex spy story and have deep characters that you get invested in. I really didn't find myself getting that invested in a lot of the characters. I mean, John Krasinski is a serviceable lead actor as Jack. He has kind of the upright, kind of patriotic Boy Scout with a little bit of troubledness underneath.
I think that's the main problem with the show is that the only people who are going to be really invested in it are those who read all the books.
Yes. And I am a
super fans of the series.
I am a Jack Ryan fan. I read Hunt for Red October. I mean, I've read multiple books. I read Hunt for October. I read Patriot Games. I read Clear and Present Danger. I read the later ones where he becomes president of the United States. Well, some of those, not all of them. But, I have been a Jack Ryan fan for years. And two of my favorite movies from when I was, you know, 10, 12, 11, 13 years old were Hunt for Red October and Patriot Games. I love those two movies. Like, those movies, I can rewatch those movies all the time.
Those are great. They are legitimately great movies.
After I finished Jack Ryan, I watched both of them.
Yeah.
Because, honestly, this show just didn't hit the tone. So for me, like, Jack Ryan, this is what I envision the character is. He's, like, smartest guy in the room always. He sees stuff that everybody else doesn't see. The only reason he's not, like, running around in the field is because he's, like, had this horrible injury. And he has, like, a family that he doesn't want to, like, leave. So all those elements are gone from that. Like, you don't feel like he's the smartest person in the room in this. You don't feel like he's doing anything that no one else, like, someone else couldn't have seen.
See, I'm going to disagree with you there because there are connections that he makes that other people don't. If there's anything in the show that I did like is the detective stories that Jack Ryan, I mean, that the stories we know he did, like Patriot Games, Clear and Present Danger, The Hunt for Red October, the driving force of those beyond, I mean, if you boil down the books, is Jack Ryan figuring out what's the plot is going to happen. Like, he's figuring out who the villain is. He's figuring out what's going on. He makes these big intellectual leaps, or he sees things that other people don't. And I actually thought that that was handled reasonably well.
Yeah, here's
in
the
show
thing, though,
is the detective aspect of it.
Yeah, but I think why it's just meh for me is because there is that awesome moment in Patriot Games where this is just expert filmmaking, right? Mm-hmm. Where there's that scene where Jack Ryan figures out that the woman with the ponytail and the red hair,
yeah,
he makes all of that connections, talking exactly what you're talking about, Andrew, about smartest guy in the room, and you see it. He's making those connections where the show is a lot more like Blunt Instrument about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just kind of tells you that he figured it out.
Right. Right. Versus like
that
showing
sequence
you. Yeah.
In the movie was just perfect. Totally. Expert filmmaking.
Oh, you're salivating for him to finally
make
that.
And the show doesn't do that. It's just I agree. Out of Jack Ryan, and there wasn't enough of that in the show.
Totally.
Way too much of him out in the field shooting his gun.
Yeah.
And Jack Ryan is an analyst first, and so not nearly enough of that.
The drama of the Jack Ryan movies is not from the action. It's from him, like, putting the pieces together and, like...
It's trying to make Jack Ryan much more Bourne, Jason Bourne.
Yes, I felt that, too. Jason Bourne...
That's just a mistake.
It's good because he's, like... intelligent, and he figures stuff out, and he's like, it's just not the show is not intelligently enough it's not written well enough to let you buy it. You buy that
convey
he's a
that.
Smart
yeah.
guy.
Nope.
Yeah, you convey that he's like so very intelligent. Like, you don't
see that.
There are
pieces of it that are well done. Mm-hmm. There are nuances to the show, and it's communicating about the terrorist's family and all of that that are pretty well done, but you know, again, it could have just been called Spy Show.
It could have been called Spy Show, and it would have been fine.
You're right. I agree.
Yeah,
I don't disagree with that. Yeah,
it's and they've tried to restart the Jack Ryan series a few times. What was that one that came out a few years ago?
That was with Chris Pine.
Right.
And it was a decent movie.
Directed by Kevin Branagh. And
it
had like Keira Knightley.
It was
again, but they're grasping for the Bourne.
Totally. Yeah. Way too
Bourne.
Way
fire,
too Bourne.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's not that. That series is not that. It's much more technical.
Mm-hmm.
It's much more intellectual. He's not an operative first. And that's just the mistake. Is if you put out a great, really smart show that was analyst and smartest guy person in the room first, I'm watching, because that's cool.
It's I don't know, maybe that show can't exist. It would be like most people would think it'd be super boring or something, but the reason why it's a meh for me too, I think we're like all circling around meh, is like there's fun parts, there's interesting characters,
there's
an opportunity,
the effort to give complexity to people that are normally the most boring and are given zero complexity. You know, the villains, they actually try to tell a story that adds depth and pain to the villain story.
I really like the detail about, you know, I don't know how much research they did, but the detail about the smuggling of the woman and her children.
What
she had to go through, and the network that is put together to accomplish that was fascinating to me. If that's like based on real research, that's a really interesting window into world is a nightmare.
So
the refugee aspect of it, completely about that.
What do you guys think of this drone pilot who suddenly gains
that was so ham. I mean,
what is
it
that?
Was like,
what
I had no idea how that added to the story.
What is this storyline of this pilot who's like feeling shitty about bombing people.
It's like, oh, we need to add this because we don't have enough, and so this is a concern these days in the war on terror is drone
dude pilots. Way and too it was through. A it's weird like, really? Thing like I was like, why are you telling this story? What does this have to do with anything?
Totally. And it was totally superfluous. Like, I thought at one point he would get himself involved in Jack's story.
It didn't come around at all. No, yeah, it had no connection.
He randomly crosses paths with the mother, the wife of the main antagonist.
Like, that
they
was
randomly
completely
cross paths,
ham-fisted. And
they don't affect each other's stories at all.
Totally not. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so bizarre.
And it's so bizarre that got just kind of randomly thrown in. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't understand the point of that.
Totally not necessary, and felt really forced. Man, it felt forced. Whew.
Yeah. So I mean, I think they were trying to tell a larger war on terror story.
Yeah.
Make it feel personal, but it just didn't work.
You know, I don't know. We politics aside, like.
Well, and they missed an opportunity because if it goes back to the main sort of elements of the strong Jack Ryan books is there's a technical side to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so if they really had gotten into the nitty gritty about how the tech works and the operational characteristics of it and what the range might be and capabilities and payload and all those details, that is part of a Jack Ryan story. Mm-hmm. And so if it involved him interacting with the, oh, I need this package delivered at this location, and Jack is part of the team that puts together the, okay, we're targeting this person and blah, 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 and you see that connection, and then they actually talk through, having Jack talk through, what are the capabilities? What's the collateral damage? Blah, blah, blah. If they talk up through that and go into the technical details of it, that is interesting.
That's a better show. Well, you're talking about a better show. Yeah.
That connects the dots. And yeah. They could have done that and should have done that if they wanted to make that piece of the storyline good. But because it was missing so much of that, it was just a ham-handed, dumb side story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. So the show kind of skated this line of like the reason this terrorist wants to kill people is because his family and people got bombed by Americans when he was a kid. His mother was killed by like Americans early on, and so
Israelis,
it paints
right. Israelis. Americans.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
That was part of the
problem. Is this totally confusing? If you don't know the details of Middle East politics and history, that's totally lost on you.
And
his motivation,
it's sort of like this skates this line of like, why is he doing this? Well, this doesn't make much sense, and it's like they're trying to humanize him with his family and like his son, and we can't just bomb the shit out of him because he's got this little boy there, you know, he's got, and it's just sort of this weird thing. And then when it gets to the tail end, it just wrapped up way too easily. It's like, why would he be the one that delivers the package to the hospital? He could have had anybody do that. He didn't need to be there, and then he would still be the problem. I don't understand why it was like that. It was way too, like, sorry to spoil a little bit, but it's just, I don't know. It's just not done very well.
It's not done very well.
No, it's kind of weak, and it needed better writing, and it needed more interesting stories and complicated characters and I don't know. Yeah, definitely kind of a meh. So, so what other geek stuff do you guys want to talk about? Any shows you guys are watching? I saw a couple of random things that I can touch on, but
I have something to report in terms of watch. I can't believe I waited this long to watch this show, but we are, I think I can say for all of us that we are huge Coen Brothers fans.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I have finally watched, I'm almost finished with season one of Fargo.
Oh, yeah.
And if you have not watched this show,
yeah.
if you are a fan of the movie at all, and that was my main reason for not watching it, was I was worried about it. Like ham-handed
legacy,
yeah,
right.
It is tone perfect. It is not a rehash. It is a totally new story, totally new approach. It has similar touchstones, and it's really a wonderful creative approach to extending that just the perfect combination of funny tone and environment and quirky
characters. It's dark comedy, right? It's like really, it's like a dark like crime drama, but
and the show is dark and quirky and wonderful,
but it still tells a crime story.
It tells a crime story set in Bemidji, Minnesota.
Bemidji.
But it has Fargo connections. It has a direct connection to the movie that is clever and funny. Anyway, I'm thoroughly enjoying season one. I encourage all of you, if you have not seen season one of Fargo and you enjoyed the movie, to watch the show.
People talk about this a lot, and I don't. Right.
What outlet are you watching it on, Christopher?
Yeah,
Hulu.
Hulu.
Oh, okay. Cool. Do you pay? You pay for Hulu?
No.
Oh, okay.
The Hulu app that I have on Xbox.
Ah, okay. So you can get commercials, but who cares?
I see the commercials. Yes.
Right. Okay.
Gotcha.
That's cool that you could watch it. And
if you pay, I think. You pay, you get fewer commercials. You still get commercials, but you get fewer.
Like Hulu does this thing where it's like you pay a certain amount and you get some commercials, and then you pay another amount and you get none. It's really it's really weird.
I'm paying the some amount.
Right.
Ah, gotcha.
I gotcha.
I'm not paying for the no commercial rate.
Right.
Well, and what's also great about Fargo, from what I can remember, the first season tells one story, and then season two tells a totally different story, but it's still story. And it's set in another part of the American kind of North.
Yes.
One of our favorite actresses, Carrie Coon, is in season two, I believe. She plays a sheriff character.
So yes.
That's her in anything is amazing.
I will be watching season two.
And then season three has my like all-time man crush, Ewan McGregor, playing two different characters. He plays a pair of brothers.
That's right. Yeah,
he plays two different characters in season three of Fargo.
Yep.
Yeah. No, I need to watch this show. Mom and Dad, I've always sung.
Mom and Dad love this show.
They love it. And I
feel like for the span of like 6 months, whenever we went over to Mom and Dad's house for dinner, the first question out of their mouths were, "Hey, so are you watching Fargo?
Are you watching Fargo yet?" Yeah.
No, Dad, I'm not.
But now I can. I have reached out to them and told them that you were 100% right.
So. Awesome.
Cool. that'll make them feel good, I'm sure. Absolutely. Yeah. So I would like to talk about a couple things before we talk about Iron Fist, because we all have watched a little Iron Fist. I've been watching I've finished Disenchantment, which is the Matt Groening like fantasy. Starts off pretty weak, but kind of fun towards the end. So
this is the animated Netflix
fantasy story
series, or movie.
This is weird for me, but my main issue is I don't like the art style.
Yeah.
I've never really liked, and it annoys me.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Like the Simpsons Futurama?
It actively annoys me. I like the Simpsons, but this art style is close enough, but different. And the art style annoys me.
I can't disagree with it. Like, it's kind of meh for what it is, and there's some stuff that is, I don't know, they could have gone a little, I mean, this is a Netflix show, so they could have gone like pretty dark or pretty, you know, and they kind of felt middling, you know, just kind of middle. They didn't take very many chances, and it's definitely not as funny as The Simpsons, definitely not as funny as Futurama. And I like both of those like early shows,
yeah.
So it kind of is disappointing, I guess. But towards the end of it, I was enjoying the characters, and the universe that they created was kind of fun. So I'm walking away with it trying to be, yeah, it was fine. It was fine. Okay. But yeah, Iron Fist. Christopher, you've watched half an episode.
Half an episode.
Andrew, you've watched half a season. I've watched a full season.
Middle of
episode 5.
I watched
all of season 1. We had a long conversation about season 1.
Right.
We did.
So I mean, what's your thoughts having watched half an episode, Christopher?
I think I watched that half episode remembering his appearance in Luke Cage.
Uh-huh.
And that kindled my hope that, okay, they've figured out what they need to do with this character, and hopefully the actor and the writing for the character improve, and they're going to learn from the lessons. That brief snippet in Luke Cage was the best sequences with Iron Fist of the entire Netflix Marvel thing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, completely. Agree.
And so it gave me lots of hope, and I will absolutely watch all of the season. We've talked about this. I love the character. And so I am hopeful that they will get it right.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And Andrew, having watched half the season, what do you think?
So far, I've enjoyed the fight scenes a lot more than season 1.
Mm-hmm.
I think they've upped their game that way. I have enjoyed the Davos storyline so far in terms of understanding where he's coming from and what he wants. I have liked that. It's a little one dimensional, but you know, the actor who plays him plays it well. I have enjoyed that there is less Ward Meacham so far. I got sick of how much he was in Iron Fist season 1. I thought he carried too much of the plot, and that would reflect it on the fact that Danny was so passive most of the season 1, is that you followed Ward through so much of the series and he kind of moved things forward.
Whole,
I'm glad that there's
the
less
whole
of
Meacham storyline in season 1 was the most unwatchable drivel. It's awful.
I'm glad that there's been less Ward. Not that I don't like Ward that much. I'm just glad that there's less of him. It just gives Danny more to do.
They definitely have like improved on his character in season 2 too. Like also like he's
and I have really enjoyed so far Alice Eve as Mary.
Yeah.
Being kind of this mysterious character with deeply troubled who shows up in odd situations, but you learn more about what's going on with her. And obviously, I'm still learning because I'm only halfway through the season, her motivations and how she's involved. And Alice Eve has two different color eyes naturally.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing that, you don't see, I mean, that's a very rare genetic mutation to see, like, one green eye and one blue eye. And, like, when they do close-ups on her face, it's jarring a little bit for me.
Yeah.
Just, I can't stop. Like, I'm like,
well,
oh my
that's
gosh,
great because it's like, eyes. She's, you
oh,
know.
She's unique.
She's
but
unique. Yeah.
It's so rare to see that. It's just like, she has a green eye and a blue eye. It kind of takes me out of it a little tiny little bit. But, you know, Alice Eve is great. I think she's good in almost anything she does. The strongest character of the entire series continues to be Colleen Wing.
Yeah.
She's the best character in the series so far.
She has the biggest arc in season 2 by far when you keep watching. Having watched the whole thing, for me, I kind of feel like they just aren't getting it right, and I don't like Davos as the villain. I don't think he has like a really good story. Feels like very one-dimensional. Feels very kind of, and they spend like they shortened this season from season 2. This is it's only 10 episodes versus 13, and it still feels dragged out. Like there's not enough content. Like there wasn't enough story.
I was hoping that it would feel a little more
like by the time
I knew that it was only 10 episodes. But
you get to like episode 6 or 7, I would say, and like they dance around three episodes. That's like, okay, just like do it. Like what are we waiting for? Like there's nothing happening, and they kind of like write themselves into a corner to extend the episodes. It just doesn't feel like they run out of content. They run out of content by episode 6. And it's like, you mm-hmm. shouldn't be running out of content, like, 60% into the show. Like,
I got you.
So, I guess I liked it. I liked the character much better. I don't like some of the choices they made for his arc and, you know, narratively what they did. I don't like the villain. I liked him fighting the hand. I felt like that was like a really interesting villain, and it felt scary, like you were afraid of this group of ninjas, you know. And mm-hmm. this feels like a step back. Like they ramped up, they had this big like arc, and then this is like smaller, and it just doesn't mm-hmm. it just doesn't work as well, I don't think. So
okay,
I like what Marvel's doing. I liked Iron Fist in that Luke Cage episode. I think that's one of the best Luke Cage episodes in season 2. And season 2 of Luke Cage is awesome. And I'm a fan of Iron Fist. And I will watch Daredevil season 3. And I will watch, you know, another
Daredevil season 3 is coming.
That's what I'm saying. Like, couple months. I love these shows, but like, I don't know.
What's the story with Daredevil? Why is it sort of taken...
I don't know. Maybe the actor had like scheduling conflicts or something, or I don't know.
Charlie Cox. Yeah, I don't know why it's taken over. What, it's almost 2 years now since. Well, I mean, they did Daredevil season 2, and that fit.
And right then the end of Defenders, like.
But the Defenders came out last year.
Yeah.
It's been over a year since we've seen Daredevil.
There's a lot of things that could be scheduling conflicts, or like
they've churned out entire seasons of Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, and Iron Fist, and a season of The Punisher.
Yeah, right?
And now they're just getting to season 3 of Daredevil. Yeah, I don't know. I'm chomped at the bit for it. I Daredevil
and,
is still
and
my
that's
favorite.
Yeah all, that's all oh no defenders. That's the best show. Like season 1 and 2 of Daredevil are great, and He's the most interesting character in the Defenders series that they did. So,
I mean, you can't fault Jessica Jones season 1 was unique, and it was
Jessica Jones season
kind
1
of
was high, fantastic.
It was higher level television.
Yeah.
Than you expected.
And Luke Cage is
a comic book story.
It's very consistent. And that's something I'll say too about season 1 of Iron Fist. It felt very like 70s kung fu movie. And there is none of that in season 2. And that's kind of disappointing to me, because that was kind of my favorite part of season 1 was, like, season 1 is kind of whatever. But, like, I really liked the rap music and the cool costumes and kung fu and this feeling of, like, this is a 70s, like, kung fu movie. And none of that in season 2. That was my favorite part. I don't know. So I know, like, the music is just nothing in this. There's no kind of, because the RZA did the season 1 music, and I don't know if he did season 2, but if he did, he kind of phoned it in for sure.
Well, the RZA's a huge kung fu.
That's what I'm
fan.
Saying.
He
right.
directed one of the episodes.
That's what I'm saying.
Of season 1.
Yeah, dude. Like, that was one of my favorite parts of that, and I don't feel that at all in this. It was kind of disappointing. But yeah, you guys watch it and let's come back to this once you guys have finished it. So
yeah, for sure.
But what else we got? Let's talk about Destiny 2. How about that?
Nope. Before we move on to games, I want to mention that this is a show we should all watch together and commit to.
Oh yeah.
Commit to discussing at every podcast the Dragon Prince. Have you read about this?
Yeah. The guys who...
It has Avatar pedigree. Mm-hmm. It's getting phenomenal reviews. The series hits Friday.
Oh, okay.
Well, on what service?
Netflix.
Awesome. I'm in.
So the next episode we're going to talk about the Dragon Prince, because we're all fans of the Avatar, and this is the Avatar, the Last Airbender, and Korra. I watched all of Korra.
Absolutely.
So
I didn't watch all of Korra, but I'd still. Well, I mean, Avatar: The Last Airbender is one of the best animated series of all time.
And
it's one of the best TV series of all time.
Oh yeah, period. Oh yeah. Like some of those episodes are really, really good. And
it's an incredible, it's incredible TV.
And the writers won't be like pigeonholed into like the Nickelodeon genre. Like they were kind of writing for 10-year-olds. You know, it's still good. But I'm interested to see like, hey, they're doing like an animated. I mean, yeah, it's still for like kids probably, but. They can kill people and say that they're killing people, kind of a thing, you know.
We'll see where they go with it. I'm excited. I mean, anything.
It has the people involved, the information, the buzz around it has mm-hmm. me very excited. So
yeah, can I say though, I so really don't like that watch. Kind of animation style, like the kind of computer animated style. I'm not too thrilled about. I like traditional cell animation, I guess. But yeah, that's kind of nitpicky. So
well, let's see how it is.
Yeah, we'll see how it is. Oh, I'm definitely excited about it. It looks great. Yep. So
right. I didn't realize that it was coming out this weekend. So I'm even that's more excited awesome. About it.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, that's cool.
It drops on Friday.
Black Panther awesome. Got added to Netflix too. Have you guys watched rewatched Black Panther since it got added?
Not on Netflix. Yeah, I own it, so yes, we've rewatched it.
Cool.
You know, the other thing that I've rewatched recently is Kira and I are working our way through the Hunger Games movies.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
And you know what? We're actually watching the last one,
mm-hmm.
and I'm really enjoying that rewatch. Those are quality movies and.
Jennifer Lawrence is very, very good.
She's amazing. Yeah. And those movies are well done. Well done.
Yeah, she commits to what she's doing.
No, they're pretty good.
Once they kind of found the right tonal. I mean, the first one is good. They didn't really know. I think it's hamstrung by the book because the book is kind of more is less fleshed out. Once you get into Catching Fire and then you get into Mockingjay and the world becomes so much more deep and rich. And the movie benefits from that, of course. Like Catching Fire, I think, is the best of the four movies. And that's where they really like, oh my gosh, like this is a great movie. We have a huge movie star. We're going to spend some money. We're going to flesh this out and make the world more complete. And it benefits from that.
Yep.
Plus, it has Francis Lawrence, who I think is a very underrated director.
I think
he's a really talented guy.
Dude, he's great. I Am Legend is freaking great. Like,
People sleep on I Am Legend, dude. That movie's really good.
Oh man, I still am like tearing up thinking about that dog scene, man. Woo!
It's messing
me up. Cool.
I have a book that I want to talk about.
Oh yeah,
a
go,
new
bro.
Fantasy
go.
Series that I've done that I've.
Oh yeah.
Dove into.
So do I.
Oh yeah. Let's hear it.
So the book is called The Blade Itself. It's written by an author named Joe Abercrombie.
Okay.
And I've kind of seen his stuff around. Whenever I go to a bookstore, I kind of, you know, I'll stroll through the sci-fi fantasy section at Barnes & Noble and maybe pick something up and read it a little bit. I think I've picked one of his books up before and read the first few pages and I don't know. It's a little dense to get into because George R. R. Martin and you know, as kind of the gold standard of, you know, modern fantasy, his stuff is really dense, but it gives you a lot of background information. Like you have a map and you can look in the back of the book to see like whose fathers and sons and houses and stuff like that. The Joe's book is nothing like that. I've read stuff online that he purposefully doesn't include maps in his book. So it's a little dense that way, but so this is the first in a trilogy, and all three books have been released, so that's good. So I don't have to wait on another book to come out, like Patrick Rothfuss and George R. R. Martin making me wait to finish your fucking series.
Whoa, triggered.
I'm not even going to start. I started Name of the Wind, and I'm not going to read the first two books until the third one comes out because I don't want to have to wait. I'm not going to experience them until I can experience it in its entirety.
I might be downloading this book if you recommend it. Do you like it?
The Blade Itself.
Sell it to me right now.
Okay. It's funny.
Mm-hmm.
It's dark. It's cynical. And it takes a long time to kind of rev up and get going, but you really get a sense of the characters are very, very well drawn.
Mm.
They have strong, unique voices, and he plays on like the fantasy kind of archetypes. The book includes kind of like an upright nobleman soldier, and includes a barbarian, or quote unquote barbarian from the north, and a wizard, and a rogue type character who a woman who kind of like freed herself from slavery and is. You know, there's kings and queens and noble people and you know, different kinds of magical beings, but it's all done in a very realistic way in this totally, you know, fantasy world. And his writing is just really funny in a lot of ways. And the inner voices of the characters are really funny. There's one character in particular. He's a cop, essentially, but he's a former, like... He's a former champion swordsman who was captured by an enemy during a war that his kingdom won, and he was kept there and tortured for years.
Mm.
And so he's been like, he was a colonel in the army, and he was a nobleman, and he was a champion swordsman, and now he's been relegated to kind of being like this mid-level detective in the King's Inquisition, is what it's called. They essentially root out corruption and lay look for traitors against the kingdom. But he's crippled. He has to walk with a cane. He was tortured for years. One of his legs doesn't really work. He's constantly in pain. A lot of his teeth were knocked out. So he has this terrible jagged smile. So his past life, he was this, you know, kind of well-respected, upright noble, and now he's this cripple who his bitterness, and he's so angry at the world because he has this, he's led these two lives where he was, you know, this kind of star, and now he's kind of, the only pleasure he gets is doing his job well as this cop / torturer.
Oh, man.
So there's a lot of pain and complexity to his story, and he's funny.
Huh.
Funny. So yeah, him as a character is really fun. His name is Glockta, Glokt,
and he's a main character. That's the main.
He's a main character. He most of the book is from his point of view.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm already downloading it off Audible, so I'll start
I'm listening to it. The guy who reads it on Audible, he does a great job.
Awesome. I'm excited. I needed a new fantasy book. Like I was kind of jonesing for something.
It takes a while to get going. Like,
yeah.
Almost the first half of the book, I don't know what's going, where it's going. But once the storylines start to tie together, it starts to get really good.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yep. And there's three of them.
Three of them. Cool.
Yep.
Well, I'll start listening to this, and we'll talk about it next time.
Sounds good, buddy.
Christopher, what are you reading? What's going on over there?
So the series that I wanted to highlight that I've begun, I've purchased all three of the books, and I will be reading them and reporting back, is the series is called The Broken Earth.
Mm.
Okay. Written by whom?
And the author is N.K. Jemisin.
Okay.
Each of the books are, the first book is The Fifth Season, the second book is The Stone Sky, and the final book in the trilogy is The Obelisk Gate. And the N.K. Jemisin has the distinction and honor of being the only author in the history of the Hugo Awards to win the Hugo Award for Best Science Fiction Novel for every book of her trilogy in three straight years.
Whoa, that's okay. Awesome.
Each of these books won the Hugo Award.
Okay.
Oh, awesome. How'd you hear about this book series?
I was reading about the Hugo Awards and thinking I needed a new sort of science fiction series, and for whatever reason... I had not been following her at all, And but the update on the Hugo Awards, there was a whole discussion about her winning the Hugo Award 3 straight years for each of the books in this trilogy. And so I was like, okay, that means I have to read them. So that's I purchased all three, and I will be reading all three. So
awesome.
I started the first one.
What's the name of the first one again?
The name of the first one is The Fifth Season.
The Fifth Season. Okay.
Yep.
Cool.
I love this. We're all kind of diving into new stuff.
Yep.
So, I mean, I'm coming back to old stuff.
Yeah.
I just finished Invincible.
I'm reading Foundation, too.
Oh, yeah?
Okay.
Well, that's old school stuff.
Now that you're not moving and selling houses, you have more time to devote to your interests.
Exactly.
Awesome.
So I finished Invincible Volume 25, which is the last it's the last book of the Invincible series written by why am I blanking on his name right now? Robert Kirkman.
Mm-hmm.
Invincible was always like my favorite superhero story, and I haven't been reading a lot of comics lately. I've been reading like one a month, you know, versus when I was reading a lot, I was reading Invincible every week. So I finally finished the story. It's the end of Invincible story. It's really interesting because like there's this whole Robert Kirkman talking about the whole series at the end of the book. Talking about 15 years of Invincible books. Like, if you think about that, finally finished it. I remember going to San Diego Comic-Con for the first time, buying Volume 1, getting it signed by Ryan Ottley and Robert Kirkman, back when I didn't know who they were.
And you just walk up to them at the...
I just walked up to them at the Image booth before Walking Dead came... Like, before the Walking Dead TV show and Robert Kirkman blew up. He was just sitting at the Image booth. No one in front of him. No big deal. So this...
Now he's like a brand.
Yeah, so this... This book has been with me through my comic book reading life, I feel like.
In your adulthood.
My adult comic book reading life. It's a really, really interesting story. I really like how it ended. Pretty amazing art, and the choices he made were really great. I'm happy with how it ended. I'm sad that it's over, because
I need to read that complete.
Yeah, I need to finish it as well. I kind of left off in the early 100s. I think I'm about 20 issues behind.
There's some crazy shit that happens in the later comics, like.
Yeah, no, him, don't tell me.
Yeah, dude,
I will read it for
there's
sure.
There's some nuts, big changes that happen, and the final fight. I would recommend you buy 24 and 25 at the same time, because I read 24 and then waited like a month to read 25, and I wish I hadn't done that, because they are like a complete story. Those two volumes go hand in hand, and once you finish 24, you're going to want to have 25 in your hands. So
awesome.
Cool. I pretty
That's
much
good
read
storytelling,
it.
Man.
No, it was really good. Really good. The characters are all great. The universe is really interesting. And it's funny because it's like this story is a play on Superman. It's a play on like if Superman had a kid and what it means. And like, but it's like this turn. And he talks about...
It plays with comic book tropes a lot.
It plays with comic book tropes a lot.
It makes it really smart.
Yeah. It's just so well written. And he's thinking about all the elements. And all these characters have different paths, and they're so interesting, and I it's still one of my favorite books. I would recommend this book to anybody. Awesome. And I'm really happy I read it all, and I just, yeah. So
you're sad there's no more story.
I'm sad there's no more story, because I love Mark Grayson, I love Invincible, and I love Robert Kirkman's writing, and it's just a beautiful book. The art is so good in it too, and Ryan Ottley and who's the other artist? I'm blanking on his name too. Anyways, yeah. Just cool. If you haven't read Invincible, go read Invincible. So, let's talk about Destiny 2. I want you two to sell me on buying Destiny 2 Forsaken because I haven't bought it yet and I'm on the fence. And tell me why I should. Tell me what's awesome about it.
Christopher.
It's the best content of any of the expansions for Destiny 2. It has all the all of the sort of awesome feel in terms of the shooting. It retains all of that. It adds complexity and interest in terms of your loadouts and your weapons. The campaign itself, it is very fun, and the progression feels like natural. It does not artificially gate you or hold you up in terms of continuing to progress on the storyline. The storyline is constructed in a certain way that there's variety, and there is the bosses that you have to take down as part of the overall campaign storyline are varied. The fights are interesting. They're a challenge based upon your eye level or your power level. At each stage of the campaign, and then when you get to the final couple of fights, the payoff in terms of the fun of the fight itself, as well as the story, is the best combination of gameplay and storytelling that they've done so far in terms of completely fleshed out, interesting video game combination of gameplay and campaign.
Have you finished the campaign?
Yes.
How long did it take you? What was the the time frame? Time played
12 to 15 hours.
Oh, okay. So that's a decent chunk.
Meaty.
Yeah,
meaty. And you're not done at the end of the campaign.
Okay. So there's
more. There's more story. Mm-hmm. There's more to learn about. There's more to do. And they've learned some lessons in terms of progression that are, if you are hardcore and want to do the raid, there are multiple things to do in order to get your power level up quickly. It involves a serious amount of grinding and doing, like, you know, excessive Twitch kind of streamer bullshit, which I can't stand, but if you want to do that, it's all there.
Right.
Right? It's all there to do. But they revamped the weekly bounty and the daily bounty stuff so that you always have something to do, and it's always getting you something worthwhile. This is the biggest change to Destiny 2 that made me drop off and stop playing Destiny 2 was that none of the stuff you could do felt like it was worth doing at all. There was nothing to be gained by playing the game that was fun to play, but after a while, it's just you're doing the same shit over and over again with not much or any payoff.
This is the flaw in Destiny. Yeah,
Forsaken has revamped all of that, where there is a ton to do, and because of the nature of the power level curve, there is a soft cap at 500, but then you absolutely can continue to grow and gain power levels to the hard cap of 600 if you continue to play the game, do the bounties, do the weeklies, run the strikes, do all that fun stuff. That is the centerpiece of Destiny, and you're going to progress. You're not going to progress as hard, as quickly as the hardcore raiders are, but if you're just a casual, you will always have something to do that will do improvements. And also, the Gambit mode, dude, it is a ball.
That is what I was going to talk about, too. I want Gambit, the new Gambit game mode is so fun.
So, very fun. Is it matchmaking where you can just join like a group that's doing?
Yeah.
So you guys have just hopped into a gambit with randoms and
Chris
done
and I
it?
Played and we dropped into two randos and. Yep. If you understand the
game mode,
it's you don't have to have. I mean, it's better with communication between the players, of course, but you don't have to have open mics with everyone on your team to be able to be successful. You have to understand the game mode, and you know you play one or two matches, and you understand the flow of the match.
Learn
and what
you the strategy
do. Exactly
the optimal strategies for winning.
Yeah,
and it's not a long. The matches are not long. It's best of five, or it's best of three. Actually,
best of
right?
three. Best of three.
Best of three, and it's a fun mix of PvE and PvP.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. And it's a great game mode. It's a lot of fun.
Bow weapons are fun and cool to play.
There's more than one. I thought there were like. It, from what I've seen online, it looks like there's just like one. There's one like one exotic, but there's other bow weapons.
There's multiple bows.
Oh,
they
cool.
Have multiple power levels.
Oh, cool. Yes.
There's some tons of legendary bows.
Oh yeah.
There's one exotic bow.
Okay.
So far, and the design of the bows are cool so far. They don't vary that much, but I'm excited to see where they go with bows as being kind of a nice addition to the weapons. Choices.
It is a sweet spot for me. It hit a sweet spot for me because it is the range on a bow is long enough that it fills sort of that sniper slot, and I headshot fools with that thing a lot, and so you can be far away and still get headshots and one hit kills. But it also is useful in medium range, where you're just taking you and it's they're quick. Enough. Some of them are quick enough where you can just clear
spam
out
arrows.
a whole bunch of adds. It's good stuff.
And it feels very the feel of the bow is very different than all the other weapons.
Yeah,
the tension
really
of the bowstring, the holding the bowstring, how you aim, you know, it's the recoil of it. It feels totally unique, which is great.
It's cool.
So yeah, the bow is a nice addition to the weapons you can utilize. So.
What do you guys think of the
new Hunter Super? Is
they've changed a bunch of the supers, right?
The choice for your super is real because you get your first super, and there's a whole quest. There's a steps in that to get your new super, but then you have to progress to get the other two. New supers, and it's a real decision because you're sort of stuck with a new super.
To actually get kills to progress to unlock new abilities. It's rather than like spending points like you did through the beginning of the campaign.
The main point I want to make, Patrick, is that they are clearly not just. Resting their laurels on the fact that the shooting is so good. That's the main Destiny 2 vanilla. Really, sort of, they kind of half-assed the. You ran out of stuff to do, and they're just hoping that because the game is so feels so great to play, that you're just going to keep playing. And they clearly learned a lesson that says that that's not enough. So we got to give something for people to do, and I think they've done that.
Something I'll highlight that Chris hasn't touched on is it adds an entirely new environment where you're in the Tangled Shore, and I haven't seen the Dreaming City yet, but that's a new environment as well. The Tangled Shore is an awesome new environment. It looks great. There's cool complexity to how it's put together. The Scorn are a new enemy, and they are wretched and fun to kill.
They are fun to fight.
Yeah, they are fun to fight. And, you know, they're creepy. There's a form of Scorn called the Screeb, which is just... they're like little bug. They're
it's
bugs
so
that
sad.
Run at you and
it's
explode.
So satisfying to shoot those things.
They're creepy as shit, and I hate them.
I love them. I love
there
them.
Is, Yeah, it is so. It has been so much fun to play, and I haven't played nearly as much as Christopher. Christopher is lucky enough that he had a couple of days where he could just spend afternoons playing this game, because his daughter was homesick. But I am still working through the campaign. I'm taking my time through it, and I'm exploring and things like that. I'll echo the boss fights through the campaign are a lot of fun. The new area is a lot of fun. The new weapons drops. The progression is fun, and you feel yourself getting more powerful as things get harder. So that's satisfying to do that. I probably put 10 to 15 hours in, and I've spent some of that exploring and a little bit of Gambit. So, and I'm still working my through the campaign, and it's been fun the whole time.
That's awesome.
It's $40 and. I don't regret. I don't regret a dollar of that. So
sure,
yeah.
Well, I mean, I kind of have a love hate relationship with Destiny. So I want to come back to it, and I probably will. I everything you're saying sounds awesome. So probably gonna
It'd be fun to run strikes again. Yeah, with the fire team, and I think us.
Well, there's like three new strikes too, right? It. Have you done any of those?
I'll tell you this, Patrick. Because of the bounties and everything else, it got me back into strikes.
Mm.
Like, I hardly ever was, like, just queuing up to by myself to run strikes. Because of the bounties and the real payoff and doing all of that, I've been running lots of strikes. Okay. And they're fun. The new ones are fun.
Cool.
And they add modifiers to them, too, so they add a level of challenge as well again.
Huh.
Yep.
Yeah,
that sounds awesome. I'm definitely going to get this for sure.
It's fun to play. The content is, the content for Destiny 2 is weak. I'll be the first person to say that. I definitely stopped playing it. But this has gotten me back into
it. I was really disappointed with both expansions that were given to me. Like, I bought the season pass. I've been kind of
weak sauce.
Dude, both of those expansions were.
Warmind was interesting, and the environments were cool. And then when we finished it, it was like you're done.
That's it.
Yeah, I played
the main story, and I was done. Like, I was like, okay, cool. Yep. So
that's why I stopped playing, because there wasn't enough to do, and it wasn't rewarding to play.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm definitely going to get that. I'm still playing Overwatch, and Overwatch is still the greatest game ever. But
okay,
I love Overwatch. It's so fun. Anyways, so Andrew, do you have a trivia for us?
I do, and it's very straightforward.
Let's hear.
We touched on it earlier, and because we talked about Henry Cavill and The Witcher, and Christopher mentioned it. So we know that it's a game series, that it's a highly successful game series, but it's actually based on a series of novels and short stories that have been out since the mid-90s.
Okay.
Here is your trivia question, and I'm not going to give you any options.
Oh, God.
What is the original language the short stories and novels were written in?
Oh, wow.
I know this. Polish.
You know it? It's Polish?
Yep.
All right. Let's go with Polish.
Christopher is 100% correct.
Oh, man.
The original Witcher stories.
Yeah.
Written by a guy named Andrzej Sapkowski. Were written in Polish. And the series of short stories... The first one published, I think, in like 1992. There's a collection of short stories called The Last Wish, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
1993, yeah. It's a collection of short stories where Geralt is the main character. And there's a bunch of these collections of stories.
Do we know how if the game has stick towards the content pretty well, or is it?
I actually don't know.
I kind of want to read these now to see if they're similar or.
Yeah, I mean,
I have seen the books at Barnes and Noble.
Oh, okay, cool.
The author is Andrzej Sapkowski, and the first collection of short stories, that included Geralt as a character is The Last Wish.
Cool. So yeah. Sounds like we got some reading for our listeners. Lots of reading to do.
Dark fantasy to read.
We got some dark fantasy to read coming up with this Netflix series. Definitely. I mean, they're just announced it, so it'll probably be like a year or two before we actually see a show.
It's been in pre-production for a while.
Okay, that's
good. For at least a few months. I knew about that they were going to try to make a Witcher series at least 6 months ago.
Well, everybody's trying to fill that that power vacuum that Game of Thrones is going to leave. People want a dark fantasy book. Right.
Netflix made an attempt with Marco Polo to have like a big splashy, like Kings and Queens, high concept slash fantasy series. I mean, Marco Polo really isn't a fantasy series because it's set in, Asia, in the Middle Ages in Asia. But that's what they want. They want a big splashy swords and magic, Kings and Queens type of to fill that void, and Netflix clearly is aiming this to be like that.
Totally.
So. Everyone wants to capture the Game of Thrones cachet, and this the world that it creates in the books and the games is a sort of an adult take on this genre. And it has, in my mind, it has the most opportunity or potential to capture some of that success. So that's why it's an easy bet for Netflix.
If they make a cool show about like a dude like hunting down magical monsters and this guy that is kind of like hated but necessary.
Yep.
That's interesting. Like, I want to see him fight. Like, in the game, you're fighting, like, griffins and zombies and
you're viewed with suspicion by everyone else because you're, like, a weird thing.
Yeah, you're, like, humans kind of are suspicious of you because you're kind of magical, too. You're, like, this magical thing. Right. And it's so good. So that could make a really good show, and I'm excited about it for sure. Thanks, Andrew. If you'd like to help Andrew with his trivia, you should email him at kingofthenorth52@gmail.com. You should email the show if you have any questions, comments, brothersgeekpodcast@gmail.com, brothers_geek@twitter.com, and Brothers Geek Podcast, Facebook, and brothersgeek.com for all your podcasting necessaries.
And be curious.
And be curious.